Welcome to Special Sauce, Serious Eats podcast about food and life. Every week on Special Sauce, we talk to some of the leading lights of American culture, food folks and non-food folks alike.
Slurping is inhaling noodles into your mouth without your lips puckering around them so that they shoot up into your mouth. A properly made bowl of ramen, the noodles are married with the soup. So when you suck them up into your mouth, they have little droplets of broth. And now you get to close your lips like a normal, you know, civilized human being. And you can chew up the food in your mouth and swallow it.
Today, I am thrilled to be talking to Ivan Orkin, a.k.a. Ivan Ramen. Ivan, a nice Jewish boy from Long Island. I call him the ramen whisperer. Or should I say the ramen slurper? Orkin started working in Japanese restaurants at the tender age of 15, working as a dishwasher at a Japanese restaurant in his hometown of Syosset. Though he says in his terrific book, Ivan Ramen, Love, Obsession, and Recipes, that he knew deep down by the time he graduated from high school that he wanted to be a cook, he ended up at the University of Colorado studying Japanese. He immediately went to live in Japan after graduation, where his lifelong love affair with Japanese culture and cooking flowered. Ivan first became known in the food world when he opened the first of two ramen shops in Japan. He became one of the most celebrated ramen shop owners in Japan. Then in 2013, he came back to the States to open his first ramen shop here in New York's Lower East Side. Orkin followed that up with another ramen spot, the Slurp Shop, where I just had a seriously delicious birthday lunch. It was awesome.
Thank you.
Here to tell us the proper way to eat a bowl of ramen and a whole lot more is the amazing Ivan Orkin. Welcome to Special Sauce, Ivan.
Thanks for having me.
And so you end up in Japan, and that's when the obsession with ramen shops
happened. Well, you know, it's funny. I like to say to people, I'm not really a ramen geek. Because
right.
I'm just a geek.
Right.
I like things, and I like obsessing over things, and I like learning about things, and it's not that, like, all I could think. Because I know guys, like, all they do, they eat ramen,
right.
You know, they 800 bowls a year, and they
right.
really just, you know, it doesn't matter what the ramen is, they want to go to each shop, and I'm super selective, and if I'm not relatively sure it's going to be a good bowl, I don't want to eat it. And,
right.
And on my day off, rather than taking the train an hour, waiting online an hour, and then coming back for an hour, I'd rather go have French in the middle of Tokyo and have a 3-hour lunch with
right.
my wife and drink wine. And, you know, so but you know, it was just that at the time, I guess, you know, I came back from Japan in like 1990, and for the next 13 years or so, is that right? Yeah. For
yeah.
the next 13 years or so, I didn't really go back that much. And in Japan, you know, in New York, you could pretty much eat a pretty good facsimile of any Japanese thing except ramen.
Yes.
It was the only thing that didn't exist. Sushi, yakitori, delicious sake, you know, they had all those things, but they didn't have delicious ramen. And so I jonesed over ramen for 13 years. I just missed it so badly, and I really liked ramen, and I would always be like, oh, I really love a bowl of ramen. And when I would go back to visit, I would always eat ramen. So when we moved back, it was the ramen boom.
Right.
And, you know, there was a ramen boom. That's, my opinion is over. But there was a ramen boom, you know, for...
And you talk in the book that the ramen chefs started using better ingredients. It was much the same way the pizza culture has developed.
Exactly.
Here.
With anything, you know, I mean, listen, when I decided to open the ramen shop, and I would tell people, Japanese friends, that I was going to open a ramen shop, they'd say, oh, I'm so sorry to hear that. What happened to you? Like, didn't you work at, like, that famous restaurant, Lutes? But now you've, like, is it something wrong? You know, have you fallen from grace? You know, and it was funny. And now, you know, people are like, oh, my God, did you hear that Joey is opening a hamburger shop? It's awesome, you know.
Right.
Harry's grinding his own meat, and he makes his own buns, and he's, you know, brining his own pickles. And it's, you know, so to me, I'd look at people and I'd say, you know, man, if I had a nickel for every crappy French restaurant that put on airs, that didn't know how to pour wine, that didn't understand table service, that didn't understand anything about what they were doing, but would charge huge amounts of money with an attitude, I mean— And then you walk out on 6th Avenue and 43rd Street, and you have the best hot dog ever. you know, and it's like, why is, yeah. I feel very strongly about food in general. To me, you know, food is, you know, I mean, talk to anybody who's been on a business trip where five meals in a row are at the best of five best restaurants. And by the fifth meal, you're like, can't I just get like.
Exactly. Yeah. I'm not, after one. What was ramen's essential appeal to you?
I think anything that comes in its own little container is very appealing. You know, it's just in this little bowl and everything you need is there in front of you. It's really hot, so you have to kind of think about how you're going to approach eating it, which makes it interactive.
Yeah, I noticed at Slurp Shop there are little drawings on the counter that tell you. So I'd like you to tell Special Sauce listeners how to properly eat a bowl of ramen.
Right. Well, you know, and like I said, Americans are so funny because Americans don't like to be told how to do anything.
But especially
in New York. But to me, you know, first of all, ramen, proper ramen is very hot. So, you know, you take your first slurp and it burns your lips. So if you...
Slurp with the spoon or slurp?
With the chopsticks.
Got it.
So I tell everybody to eat ramen properly, in my opinion, the same way... If you see a friend from out of town eating a slice of pizza with a knife and a fork, you say, dude, you know, it's cool. If that's how you want to eat the pizza, enjoy it. But here we don't eat that. Let me tell you why.
Right.
Right? Because the whole point of it is, you know, you fold it over. It's warm in your hand. You guide it into your mouth. Your first few bites are painful. And until you really learn how to keep the molten cheese off the top of your mouth, you know, I'm sure I have scar tissue on the top of my mouth because I'd rather eat the pizza properly than... wait until it's warm enough. So ramen is the same thing, and the bowl is really hot. It's also a lot of carbs to try to eat, right? I mean, if you eat it really slowly, I mean, that's a kind of a sick amount of, you know, pasta to eat. It's a big bowl of pasta. And so I also think that when you slurp, you get a rhythm that I think I find very appealing. You know, it's like, you know, you're not chatting, you're not like laughing between bites, you're not like having some engrossing conversation. Well, you shouldn't, because you should be like in your bowl. You're just, you know, so you know, I tell people you take fewer noodles than you think you need.
With your chopsticks.
With your chopsticks.
Okay.
And you pull them free from the pile because the way the noodles are folded into the bowl, they sometimes get stuck.
Sure.
So your slurping will be to no avail because it's locked in that bowl. So you pull the noodles out free. And then you open your mouth and you almost make your mouth sort of almost like a hole, you know, that you're going to, you know, your lips shouldn't really touch noodles when you slurp.
Right.
That whole thing where you hear that sound like, you know, the dog in the Disney movie who's eating the pasta, you know, you're not supposed to have that. That's not slurping because you're not slurping.
Right.
Because you're gliding, rubbing noodles up against your face, which is not what you're supposed to be doing. So you need to make a great image to me is in the morning when you get your first hot cup of coffee. And it's one of those moments where most people would rather risk a little burn and get that first cup of mouthful of coffee. And so you suck in all this air as the coffee kind of glides up into your mouth. And you're very careful not to burn yourself, but you're also careful to try to cool it off while you're drinking your coffee. So slurping is sort of similar. That vibe of kind of sucking in the air to cool down what's going into your mouth.
Right.
I also believe that you're supposed to do that because I watch people eat, and I don't mean to be disrespectful to anybody, but I watch them take half of a mouthful of noodles and then they bite it off, and sometimes they even shake their head back and forth and the noodles are kind of flippering back and forth, and then they kind of fall back into the bowl. And it's like, well, I mean, if you invited me to your house and you gave me steak and I sliced a big hunk of steak and I put it in my mouth and I put half of it in and half of it out and I kind of ground my teeth around it and then kind of spit it back into the bowl, you wouldn't invite me back to dinner. You'd say, wow, that guy, man, he has some really interesting way of eating. You see that shit?
Right.
You know? So to me, the eating noodles is the same deal.
Right.
You know, you slurp noodles so that A, you cool down the broth, but B, you now have a mouthful of noodles that, if they've been made properly, are coated with broth.
So let's just define slurping for everybody.
Okay.
So how do you define slurping?
Slurping is inhaling noodles into your mouth without your lips puckering around them so that they shoot up into your mouth. A properly made bowl of ramen, the noodles are married with the soup. the same way a bun should be married to a meat on a sandwich.
Right.
If it's Genoa salami, maybe you shouldn't have that soft onion roll because it's a disaster. It's the same thing with noodles. You know, the broth should stick to those noodles. So when you suck them up into your mouth, they have little droplets of broth clinging to them.
So you're getting soup, you're getting noodles.
You're getting noodles, and now you get to close your lips like a normal... you know, civilized human being, and you can chew up the food in your mouth and swallow it.
Like
anybody should eat.
And then do it again.
Right, and then do it again. And then we get into the rhythm part where it's like now you're kind of like... And then you get to that scene in Tampopo where, you know, they're talking about, do you eat the meat first? Do you sip the noodle? What do you do? I mean, I think that's like the dumbest scene in the whole movie, but I think the idea is that when you are eating ramen, there is some of that kind of fun where you're like, you know, you're really enjoying. Hopefully, you're really enjoying it. Hopefully, you think it's really delicious. Hopefully, you're hungry and you've been waiting to get this. Maybe even it's a famous place that you've wanted to go, so you're super happy.
So this is mindful ramen eating.
Yes, and so you're sitting. Well, I only do mindful eating. I do almost no mindful. When I do unmindful eating, I eat celery sticks and lettuce,
right?
Because I don't want to waste calories. I'd rather eat low calorie or a banana. But you know, otherwise I tend to be mindful when I eat. But it's a lot of fun because, you know, now you're like, you know, you slurp up some noodles, you're chewing them, you dip your renge into the broth, you take a sip, you have, and even like, once again, this tampopo where you have the chashu. Well, the chashu, if you get your regular bowl, you didn't add any extra meat. You get one really good piece of meat.
Right.
If you shove the whole thing into your mouth in one
chashu
shot.
Chashu is the pork.
Yes, chashu is the pork. It's the Chinese style pork. Then it's all gone. So do you eat it all in one shot? Do you take little bites because it's your favorite? How do you eat it? I mean, I'm always into that whole thing.
Sure.
And you get into this whole rhythm. And for me, when I eat ramen, generally speaking, almost every time I'm surprised when I'm finished.
So you're an American who opens a ramen shop in Japan.
Right.
What was the reaction? Because you sort of became this ramen celebrity. Was it in part because you were an American who was making good ramen?
Of course. I mean, I'm not stupid. You know, my wife was the one who suggested opening a ramen shop. She said, it's great. It's a great hook.
Right.
There are no other. She goes, I checked. There are no other. There are no foreigners. Maybe Koreans or Japanese, Korean people that were born in Japan. Or maybe there were some Chinese guys. But there were no, like, Western white dudes.
Right.
Which for Japanese people, I think... The white American dude is sticks out. Yeah, absolutely. That was the hook. I knew it was the hook.
Yeah.
But I also knew that all restaurants throughout the world are exactly the same. They're all exactly the same. You have to figure out how to lure someone into your restaurant. It's very hard. You could probably name 10 that prematurely closed that was a travesty because they were better than any other restaurants in their
And
in
then
the city.
You can sa- then you have to satisfy them. But first you have to get them in the door.
You have to get them in the door. And then we're all salesmen. We're all salesmen. Here's this dish. I think it's really great. I worked on it really hard. I know that if you eat this, you're going to want to come back.
Right.
This is great. And we're all selling people all the time. Try this.
And so the novelty sort of outweighed any cultural resentment.
Well, I don't think there was any cultural resentment. I mean, I could certainly tell you plenty of stories of people that were disrespectful and rude to me because I was an American, and no matter what I did, I was never going to be right, and they laughed in my face. And, you know, I don't really care because that didn't really bother me because, like, once again, I'm a big boy, and I made up the hook.
Right.
I knew what I was getting into, and I've been involved in Japan all my life, and I would be willing to gamble that most expats in whatever country they go, at some point— come up against someone who doesn't think they have a right to be there.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's if you want to be an expat and you want to adopt another country as your special place,
you got to take that.
You got to be able to take it.
Yep.
But there's other things you get back.
Sure.
You know, I don't always have to be Japanese. There's lots of things about being Japanese that are a big fat pain in the ass, and I don't have to deal with that stuff because I'm not Japanese. And if there's something that I think is stupid, sometimes I say, that's stupid, I'm not doing it.
Right.
You know, it's a trade-off.
Sure.
It's fair.
So you come to New York. Did you just want to get back to the States?
No, I never thought I'd live here again.
Really?
I really never thought I'd live in America again. I was done. I was like, I don't need to go back to America. I'm really happy in Japan. And then we had a massive earthquake and the earthquake really
scared you.
It scared everybody. It scared the family. My youngest was just a baby, and he was, you know, and we had a lot of aftershocks. So, you know, in the first. It happened in March,
and
in March 11th, 2011. And, you know, for the first 2 or 3 months after the earthquake, I mean, there were aftershocks every day. And there were, wow. Some of them were really big. And we got to the point where we just kept a pile of clothes and money and food and water at the front door, and we would, every time there was a big aftershock, we would all, and I lived in a concrete house. The living room, kitchen, dining area was on the third floor.
Right.
And so we would always have to race downstairs. There was all kinds of warnings about food you shouldn't eat that was being irradiated, about food that was being relabeled, even though it was from Fukushima, they were labeling it somewhere else. Or they,
wow.
And so we were getting all our food, American food from Costco, and vegetables grown in Kyoto. And it, there was just a lot of stuff that we were, you know, uncomfortable about. My wife was really, you know, flipped out about all this stuff, and then business was off for a while, and they were having brownouts, and, you know, they would say, in the next 45 minutes, you may have no electricity for 6 hours. And
right.
You'd be like, well, how the hell am I supposed to run this place without electricity? And so there were lots of little things, and then at the same time, I kind of was getting friendly with the Lucky Peach people, and we did the first issue together, and they were super supportive.
Lucky Peach is the magazine. They do a lot of single subject issues,
right.
And they did a ramen
and the opening
issue
for them was ramen, and I was on the cover. It was very nice. Then they introduced me to a literary agent, and I was able to sell my story. So I had a book deal, and then everybody was saying, you know, ramen's getting really hot in New York.
Right.
You
and
should
at
open
that
a
time,
shop.
You know, there wasn't a ramen shop on every corner the way there is now.
And there is. I mean, you know, I'm from Tokyo, so to me, they're still pretty far.
You know, if you read Lucky Peach or, you know, David Chang and you have both said sort of ramen is over. But do you really think that?
Didn't say that ramen was over. What I said is that, and I think David said something different than I said, but what I was talking about was how I said that in the Washington Post that I thought the ramen boom in Japan was over.
Got it.
And I got a bunch of, you know, nasty comments like, who the fuck do you think you are? And I was like, I don't know. I've lived there for 25 years.
Right.
Fuck you. And I had 2 super successful shops, and I know everybody who has shops. So, I mean, it's not as if I'm a stranger there.
Right.
And when I say the ramen boom is over, I don't mean that ramen's not good anymore or not popular anymore or non-existent anymore. As a matter of fact, I think there are more ramen shops than ever right now.
Yes, and it's more not, good it's, ramen
yes,
shops.
Yes, more good shops. All I meant was that when I first went to Japan in the 80s, ramen was guy food. It was blue-collar food. It was college kid food. It was, you know, you didn't have a bunch of girls wearing designer clothes that all said, "Hey, let's go get ramen for lunch." They didn't do that. It wasn't.
Yeah.
It wasn't really feminine. And you know, in America, you know, the whole feminist movement is much more. There's a feminist movement here. Where in Japan, you can still say we have a special ladies' lunch. It's half the portion.
Right.
Where an American woman might get offended by that and say, "Well, you know, how do you know how much I eat?"
Yeah.
But in Japan, that's okay.
Yeah. To me, it's like the fact that there are more good ramen shops in New York than ever before is a good thing.
Yes, absolutely. You know, hey, listen, I'll tell you what. Any chef who tells you they don't want competition is a pussy.
Right.
You know, you want to stay sharp, you need to have some competition.
Yeah,
it's important.
I agree. So your next venture is not going to be a ramen shop.
No, my next shop is going to be called Corner Slice. Basically sort of an Italian bakery, old school. You know, years ago, you'd go to an Italian bakery. There weren't pizzerias. Pizzerias were invented because it was one of the things they served in the bakery, and everybody started really liking it, and they started making more of it, and then they started specializing it. The same way ramen shops used to be Chinese restaurants, and they serve all kinds of things. And then, nobody wants the fried rice, the gyoza, and the liver sauté anymore. They just keep asking for ramen.
Right.
Let's just serve ramen.
Right.
And
so this is going to be a slice shop.
It's going to be a slice shop. We're also, all three of us, my partners are my opening chef at Slurp Shop and Ivan Ramen, Mike Bergman, and my partner at Slurp Shop, David Peran, and they grew up in Jersey. I grew up in Long Island. We all bemoan the loss of both the coffee shop and the good slice shop.
Because
you know, now you have this third wave coffee where there is no food program, and you know, you really just have coffee, and which is fine. And I love coffee, and I love delicious coffee,
yeah.
And I make a pour over every morning. I mean, I'm a coffee fanatic.
Yeah.
But you know, when I was younger, if you, you know, when you wanted coffee, you'd say, hey, let's meet at the diner on the corner. Or we met at Second Avenue right. Deli, and we would have a Blintz and, you know, and a babka, and we'd get coffees. And you, yeah. you know, your friend might say, you know what, I didn't have anything to eat today. You know, I'm going to get a kind of sandwich yeah. or whatever.
Sure.
And that was, to me, the coffee shop in New York, for me as a New Yorker, sometimes I don't really get it because I don't want to just drink coffee. And right. a lot of times the other offerings are not
substandard.
Yeah. You know, they're just, yeah, they're not. I mean, like I said, I don't even want to say, I didn't want to like give an right. opinion about whether I yeah, think yeah. it's good or bad. It's not appealing to me.
Exactly.
And so we're going to be serving grandma slices in, you know, pies too, of course, right. but grandma slices in a tray.
I can't wait, man, because, you know, I wrote a whole book on pizza and I have been lamenting the state of the slice.
Yes. Well, and it's going to be good and the prices are going to be good and the dough is cold fermented. The cheese is pulled.
Yeah, you're an obsessive.
On,
you're going to be great. I have no doubt. It's
going to be, I promise. And then, but we're also making everything on premise. Breakfast right. sandwiches on our own bread, you know, pastries. Everything's going to be made in-house. And we're doing La Colombe coffee, so we're going to have Sirius. You know, we got a beautiful custom-made La Marcoso.
Can you invite me to friends and family?
Yes.
All right.
Yes, you're
all
kidding.
All right.
It's going to be wonderful.
So now it's time for the special sauce all you can slurp buffet.
Okay.
So it's just a bunch of questions that you shouldn't obsess about for too long. Who would be at your last supper? No family allowed. Could be people living, dead, artists, musicians.
Right. Jerry Garcia.
Jerry Garcia is good.
Yeah, Woody Allen.
Woody Allen.
Gosh, maybe Tom Wolfe.
This is a great table. You know, one more person. You need a woman.
I need a woman. Joni Mitchell, although she's crazy and she smokes. But
all right, that's good. That's good. And what would you be eating?
It's my last meal, or is it just a, if it's yeah. a last meal, we're eating sushi.
Okay.
That's my promise to myself. If I ever find out I'm going to die soon, I'm right. going right to the most expensive sushi bar.
Okay. And what do you cook when there's nothing in the house to eat?
You know, I realized a year or so ago that I was getting older and out of breath and overweight, and I've had this complete rebirth. I'm like, I eat really well. I lift weights every day. I'm
Got it.
Really
yeah,
into
you look
it.
Good,
and,
man.
And so I actually have a lot in the house. Like, I eat a lot of fruit. I do is my method is really to go. I go to Costco or I go to what's the place on the Fairway or
right.
I go to a place like that. I buy lots of meat and vegetable and fruit, and then when I get home, I process everything. I get meat. I break it out into cutlets and cubes, and then I vacuum pack it all. And,
got
and
it. So, I have so lots it's of ready stuff. To go.
But. I mean, even just the other day, though, we were like, I came home from work. I was exhausted. My wife had gotten into something else, so she didn't cook
right.
dinner. And I had, you know, I had 20 minutes to figure out dinner.
Right.
And so, you know, I stopped using a rice cooker because I got this great Staub rice cooker thing.
Right.
So I make really good Japanese rice in a cast iron enamel pot. So I made up a thing of rice. I had some chicken thighs, and I brined them. Salt and water and garlic, like I always do. Maybe I had an hour, and then I made. I tossed them in a combination of flour and katakuriko, which is potato starch, and fried them till they were crispy. And then, I made like a teriyaki thing and poured it over the whole thing, and I braised it in a pretty potent teriyaki. And then we just did a classic sort of Japanese diner. You know, a dinner. It was you
right.
know, a pile of rice.
That sounds pretty awesome
yeah,
to me. That's
some,
way more elaborate than we do.
Braised chicken, and then I had some, and I had veg. I had spinach and broccoli in the fridge that I cooked off, and then we piled that on the plate, and it was just awesome.
What are your guilty pleasures? Do you have any now that you've gotten healthy?
I do, but I don't let myself.
You don't indulge.
Well, I mean, like so. I mean, you know, this past year, I in the last few months, I stopped traveling as much. But I went through like this 6 month thing where I was just traveling all over the world and doing these events and doing things and just like, you know, I was seeking out like ice cream. Ice cream is one of my favorite things.
Does it even matter what brand?
Well, I'd rather eat ice cream. I don't eat ice cream at home. I like eating, you know, like I like going and getting a sundae.
Got it.
So
me too.
I would crush a sundae, and I would.
What I do is I convince myself that I just order the child's portion with some hot fudge or butterscotch.
Right.
I did it right after I had ramen today. I went over to Ample Hills and I had some butterscotch. Hot butterscotch is a beautiful thing.
I used to think their ice cream was too rich, but I don't think so anymore.
No, it's good.
It's really good.
So, if there was one person that you could break bread with, like have a one-on-one lunch with, just because you think they'd have a lot of interesting things to say, who would it be?
I don't know, Warren Buffett.
Warren Buffett. He would definitely have some interesting things to say about all kinds of things. I like that. And lastly, what would happen on Ivan Orkin Day? If there was Ivan Orkin Day all over America,
right,
what would be happening?
Common sense would reign for one fucking day.
All right, I like that. Thank you so much for sharing your special slurp with us, Ivan Orkin. Check out Ivan's terrific book, Ivan Ramen, Love, Obsession, and Recipes. And if you're ever in New York City, check out Ivan's two ramen shops here. And we can't wait for the Corner Slice.
And we
place.
Can't wait. You know, all my friends, my partner said, make sure you tell Ed about it. He has to come to the Corner because it's going to be great.
I will come. Anyway, it's great to have you, Ivan. It's great to see you as always. And we'll see you next time, Serious Eaters.
Thanks for having me.